And after the suburbs, America, where will you go? Where will you flee to escape from the plague that sweeps from the rotted inner core of your once prided cities? And where will you teach your children, America? Will you build your churches higher? Can you afford the hypocrisy, the two-faced scandal of equality for all men? And how will you teach your children, America? Will you teach them to love and respect each other for the sake of our integrity? Or will they live as you have lived, in fear, hate, and mistrust? And after the suburbs, America, where will you go? Tell me, America, I want to know. That was the opening song for a tribute to the life of Martin Luther King Jr. that I composed when I was 14 years old in Abilene, Texas. The year was 1970. Martin Luther King Jr. had been assassinated just 2 years before, and I, like millions of others, was still deeply affected by his loss, and probably more importantly, by the unshakable feeling that our country had turned a terrible corner. The optimism of the 60s was brutally erased by the assassinations of the Kennedy brothers and Martin Luther King Jr. And since that time, many of us have felt that there's some shadowy, dark group of people manipulating world events. And I personally feel that in a more pronounced way than I ever have in these days. So, yes, as a child prodigy in 1970, I got as far as composing that song I just sang, because even though I could imagine what I called the Martin Luther King Peace Cantata, I did not have the compositional skills to complete the entire piece. My intention was to set some of his writings to music. The culmination of the piece would be the magnificent I Have a Dream speech, which I thought was the most powerful and eloquent oratory ever spoken by an American person. To my young mind, that speech was the essence of what an American should ascribe to be, because it resonates with the soul of our great nation. I thought it should be attached as a preamble, or postamble rather, to the Declaration of Independence, or somehow enshrined as a separate, albeit long, article to our Constitution. When preparing for this sermon a few years ago, I could not help but ask myself, what would Martin Luther King Jr. say about the world we now live in? I believe his head would explode if he was to witness the insanity and brutality of the present Trump administration. Where shall I start? Arbitrarily denying transgendered people the right to serve in our armed forces, what he described as a Muslim ban, toying with the lives of DACA recipients, TPS immigrants, government workers, tearing children away from their parents who wish to immigrate to our country, and disparaging immigration of people from what he describes as shithole countries. I strongly believe the king would have been one of those forceful voices, raising his voice against the notion of an endless war on terror. I believe we would hear him say the same words he spoke on April 4th, 1967, at a meeting of clergy and laity concerned about our war in Vietnam at the Riverside Church in New York City. This is what he said. As I have walked among the desperate, rejected, and angry young men, I have told them that Molotov cocktails and rifles would not solve their problems. I have tried to offer them my deepest compassion while maintaining my conviction that social change comes most meaningfully through nonviolent action. But they asked, and rightly so, what about Vietnam? They asked if our own nation wasn't using massive doses of violence to solve its problems, to bring about the changes it wanted. their questions hit home. And I knew that I could never again raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without having first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government. For the sake of those boys, for the sake of this government, for the sake of hundreds of thousands trembling under our violence, I cannot be silent. Those magnificent words about the unending nature of violence were spoken by Martin Luther King Jr. almost 52 years ago, yet they still ring true today. I invite you to think about our present situation with the use of violence on an international scale and how it so eerily relates to the time when King spoke those words. The speech entitled Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break Silence, was probably the least well-known of Dr. King's speeches, but I believe it must be read with new eyes for a new generation. Of course, the I Have a Dream speech is timeless, but this one is quite timely, and it's painfully appropriate for this moment in history, especially when consider that our war in Afghanistan has gone on for 17 years. As some of you have heard me speak on the subject of compassion and justice, I've challenged people to consider the moral consequences of how we prosecute this war on terror for many years now in a sermon entitled Spiritual Challenges of Asymmetrical Warfare. On September 26, 2001, I said these words. As a nation, we must learn to defend ourselves and at the same time try to understand the circumstances of disenfranchisement, bitterness, and hopelessness that created those with which we are now engaged. As human beings, we must reach out to each other when it seems impossible to do so. As members of a spiritual community, we must look inside of ourselves for the God who has the power to transform the world. We must understand on a molecular level that we are all responsible for everything that happens and we are bound inextricably to one another. Yes, we should pray, and so will our enemies to the same God. Yes, we should defend ourselves by launching attacks so devastating and awful they will make the entire world afraid to attack us. Shock and awe. But they will attack us and do so with ever more terrible consequences. We will call our enemies evil, but discount the evil inside of us. We will all dance the maddening dance of war, and we will bathe in unspeakable and secret places. And when we are exhausted from our mutual struggles that will go on perhaps for generations, there will come a time for putting aside our weapons. Then it is entirely possible we will embrace each other as best friends, perhaps uniting in a common struggle against those pesky outer space aliens. My God, what has over 17 years of warfare revealed to us? We now see the consequences of this bathing in unspeakable and secret places I warned of. Consider now what we know of Abu Ghraib prison, Guantanamo Bay, the rendering of people to be tortured in other countries for us, in our name. Thousands of innocent Iraqi citizens dead, not to mention the Afghanis. The erosion of our civil liberties, and the revelation in 2007 that our government has been spying on us. Please don't misunderstand me. My intention is not to turn this sermon into a political speech. My intention is to honor a great American who had enormous insight and wisdom concerning issues of social injustice and lack of compassion, and how that ultimately leads to spiritual bankruptcy that can poison an entire world. I'm not a political genius, and I'm not a prophet. However, many can attest to the fact that I predicted our current spiritual and moral crisis as regards to this war on terror 17 years ago. and the accuracy of my predictions are quite easy to explain. They're drawn from an understanding that we have sacrificed our spiritual compass for the sake of political expediency, and we continue to do it every day. King was able to do the same thing 52 years ago. In his case, he was a political genius and a prophet. Listen to what he said on April 4th, 1967. Here is the true meaning and value of compassion and nonviolence, when it helps us to see the enemy's point of view, to hear his questions, to know his assessment of ourselves. For from this view, we may indeed see the basic weaknesses of our own condition. And if we are mature, we may learn and grow and profit from the wisdom of the brothers who are called the opposition. Somehow this madness must cease. We must stop now. I speak as a child of God and brother to the suffering poor of Vietnam. I speak of those, for those whose land is being laid waste, whose homes are being destroyed, whose culture is being subverted. I speak for the poor of America who are paying the double price of smashed hopes at home and death and corruption in Vietnam. I speak as a citizen of the world, for the world as it stands aghast at the path we have taken. I speak as an American to the leaders of my own nation. The great initiative in this war is ours. The initiative to stop it must be ours. A true revolution of values will soon cause us to question the fairness and justice of many of our past and present policies. On the one hand, we are called to play the Good Samaritan on life's roadside, but that will only be an initial act. One day, we must come to see that the whole Jericho Road must be transformed so that people, men and women, will not be constantly beaten and robbed as they make their journey on life's highway. True compassion is more than flinging a coin to a beggar. It is not haphazard and superficial. A true revolution of values will soon look uneasily on the glaring contrast of poverty and wealth. With righteous indignation, it will look across the seas and see individual capitalists of the West investing huge sums of money in Asia, Africa, and South America, only to take the profits out with no concern for the social betterment of those countries and say, this is not just. It will look at our alliance with the landed gentry of Latin America and say, this is not just. The Western arrogance of feeling that it has everything to teach others and nothing to learn from them is not just. A true revolution of values will lay hands on the world order and say of war, this way of settling differences is not just. This business of burning human beings with napalm, of filling our nation's homes with orphans and widows, of injecting poisonous drugs of hate into veins of people normally humane, of sending men home from dark and bloody battlefields, physically handicapped and psychologically deranged, cannot be reconciled with wisdom, justice, and love. A nation that continues year after year to spend more money on military defense than on programs of social uplift is approaching spiritual death. America, the richest and most powerful nation in the world, can well lead the way in this revolution of values. There is nothing except a tragic death wish to prevent us from reordering our priorities so that the pursuit of peace will take precedence over the pursuit of war. There is nothing to keep us from molding a recalcitrant status quo with bruised hands until we have fashioned it into a brotherhood. Tell me, if a man like Martin Luther King could see nearly 50 years ago where we are now, What does that say about who we are as a nation right now? I feel like I have a moral and spiritual giant speaking for me in the person of Martin Luther King. He was able to speak more eloquently than I what I wish to say about the importance of practicing our UU principles and being witnesses to their transformative power. I will end this sermon with the conclusion of the one I delivered nearly 17 years ago. It says what I want to say today. We know everything we need to know about how to end wars before they begin. It is a mistake to believe that our governments are going to solve the deep problems the world is encountering. These problems are not rooted in governments, but in the hearts and minds and spirits of people. Young people who do not have jobs, do not have homelands, do not have power over their future, who live in squalor, who have not been nourished with a steady diet of violence and hatred all their lives, those are the people we need to care for. That kind of care and compassion does not come from governments, but from each individual person making conscious decisions every day about the kind of world they want to live in. Compassion, love, honesty, patience, and integrity need to be practiced by each individual so we can infuse our children with those qualities and thereby create governments that reflect those values and make them the cornerstones of policy, both domestic and foreign. The world is now too small for human beings to treat it like it's not a schoolyard. We all know the rules we learned in kindergarten, but we've somehow forgotten. Treat others as you would have them treat you. Ask for forgiveness. Say please. Walk a mile in someone else's shoes. Apologize when you hurt someone. Take care of each other. Don't push. Always share. And listen when someone else is talking. Namaste.